Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The tide appears to be turning against Ukraine. The counteroffensive is a stunning failure. Future Western funding for the proxy war is in doubt. And European voters have started to vent their displeasure for a conflict designed and promoted by their elites. Is this the beginning of the end? Crosstalking Ukraine and the West, I'm joined by my guest, Larry Johnson, in Tampa. He is a managing partner at Berg Associates and a former CIA analyst and U.S. State Department counterterrorism official. In Belgrade, we have Stephen Gajic. He is a research associate at Belgrade's Institute for European Studies. And in Sydney, we cross to Simon Boykov. He is a political activist, a Sputnik contributor, and host of the Aussie Cossack show on TNT News Radio. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let's go first to Larry in Tampa. Well, it looks like the Western elite's project known as Ukraine is hitting some speed bumps. Is it fair, is it fair to say this is the end of the beginning, or am I being too optimistic? Larry?
No, I think it's there. The key thing is, how long will the West continue to try to pour money into this? That's the only thing that's keeping Ukraine afloat. Without Western aid, they won't last a week. And so what you're starting to see in Washington is what was once unified support has frayed and frayed significantly. The Congress is now, at least some members of Congress are willing to use Ukraine as some leverage. And the amount of funds that once were readily available have shrunk. So yeah, we're looking at the light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not an onrushing train.
Stephen, let's go to you in Belgrade. I mean, let's talk about your neighborhood. Slovakia had an election. Mr. Fico has come out on top, very much expected, though at the very last minute, the exit poll said something different. There's some kind of shenanigans going on there. But at least for the time being, his party won. Wait, Hungary is in the same category here. What's going on with the so-called Western unity?
The Ukrainian war is only an avatar for a bigger picture, and that is the end of parasitic system, the end of neocolonialism, which is happening everywhere. And of course, it's happening in Europe, in Eastern Europe in particular. The Slovaks that you just mentioned just had enough of being bullied by Brussels and by the United States, to be quite frank, and constantly ordered to give more and more of their weapons, money, and everything that is needed for the globalist cause, which is the Ukrainian war. And they had enough. They simply had enough. So they voted somebody who wants to end this kind of vassal status that Slovakia, as well as many other, most of the European countries have towards Washington. So now, we see is only the beginning of the process that will continue. However, I do expect that there will be a backlash. I think that the globalist system that is falling apart will do everything to create more chaos, only in order to preserve what they had.
I absolutely agree with you. They're not going to go down without a fight. No way. The hegemon will not give up easily. Let's go to Sydney. Simon, one of the interesting things about this is we were talking about with Slovakia and Hungary, and we had Politico in the last news cycle come out with two stories, and Politico is probably the most pro-war outlet there is out there. No arms left for Ukraine in Europe, and also the funding crunch is coming here. And these are the most pro-war people at Politico here. Is this a sign of the times that they're beginning to think about changing the situation? Go ahead, in Sydney.
Look, I think that this is a race to the bottom. What we're going to see next is a competition between Western powers, Western leaders, to get out of the conflict first. It's a matter of who's going to be holding the baby last. And for example, in Australia, our Prime Minister Albanese just yesterday announced that he's sending anti-drone systems to Ukraine. And everyone in Australia is saying, well, hang on a second. Aren't the Americans saying they're stopping money? The British, the Germans, Hungary, Slovakia, everyone is turning their backs. And the Prime Minister in Australia, Anthony Albanese, is under very heavy criticism because Australians don't want to be left last holding the baby and facing, for example, Russia, let's just face it, on their own or with a coalition of whoever's left. So the smart leaders out there, the people in charge of Western countries who have a little bit of foresight, well, they can see that this is a very good opportunity to withdraw, to say stop, and get out of the situation before they're left on their own with Zelensky.
Well, Larry, anyone part of the so-called coalition that withdraws will be punished by the United States, friend or foe, Larry.
Well, the United States has been a one-note Charlie. You know, there was a Saturday Night Live skit several years ago with Christopher Walken, and even every time he'd come out, a band was playing, and he would tell him, "We need more cowbell."
Yeah. Well, I remember it. Yeah, that was we date ourselves. That's a long time ago, but it was a good one. Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, but that's been the Western strategy. They call for more cowbell. It's just a matter if we only get the right weapons system and package in the hands of the Ukrainians, then they'll be able to run off with it and defeat the Russians. And it doesn't matter whatever weapon system is sent over, whether it's the M777 artillery pieces or the HIMARS or the F-16 or the M1 Abrams tank or the Leopard or the Challenger. You don't have trained Ukrainians that can operate that equipment, and then the Russians have effective fire from both artillery, fixed-wing aircraft. They're destroying it right and left. So there's not the West has this military fantasy that's been based upon, you know, 30 years of beating up on what I call little brown people around the world who didn't have artillery, who didn't have fixed-wing aircraft. Now they're confronting a kind of war that nobody alive has seen it. The last time they saw anything like this was in World War II, only back then we didn't have drones.
Well, Stephen, then you know, our collective wisdom here, it tells me this is just a grift. Just keep it going on as long as they're going to fund it, okay? I mean, the outcome is obvious here, okay? How we get there, that's a different story. But as long as the money is there, why not take it?
The outcome is obvious, but what I am afraid of is a shock therapy or the shock event that might, flip the attention. So Ukraine is over. Now let's move to some other spot. I mean, nobody is asking today what happened with the whole COVID thing and are the reports about certain vaccines being deadly true or not? Because now we have this big war, and what if something else comes, and then nobody will even notice that Ukraine is just it just faded away somewhere in the horizon. So what I think is that every trick in and outside of the book will be used in order to prolong the situation, because the hegemony is definitely over, and the countries all over the world and the peoples are all over the world are in this, I would say, a liberation movement, and they're trying to and are successful in fighting this neo-colonial system. But that is why I think we might see some events that might try to divert attention. So what I'm looking at now is the region of Caucasus and the Pacific, because it seems to me that maybe even the Balkans, where I am, because it seems to me that after the failed counteroffensive, there is a desperate need to divert Russia's energy and also to try to ruin the coalitions that are trying to be formed. Especially, I think that the Middle East and South Caucasus, Balkans are volatile, which is why I think that the attention of not only the United States, but also Great Britain even more, and some other Western countries are being focused on.
Yeah, so one of the things also that I'm worried about is a false flag operation, because I think that's the last card that the U.S. can play. We had Nord Stream, but there's some other things they can do just to divert attention and to, you know, make it the pro-democracy against autocracy, get that message back online. Go ahead, in Sydney.
Well, Russia's been extremely careful, and hats off to the Russian military and the leadership in Russia for how careful they've been. There have been almost zero attacks on civilians. And people in the West understand that. If in the initial stages of the special military operation, People were sympathetic because they thought the full might of the Russian army is being unleashed in a World War II style, you know, scorched earth policy war. That evidently was not true. And people in the West, in Australia, for example, they say now that Russia is the good guy. And I want to add to the opinion today that definitely the opposition in the West, particularly in Australia, is very growing. It's expanding. And it comes off the back of the lockdowns, the forced mandates in relation to the COVID vaccines. People do not trust the government. People don't trust the government at all now. There's a trend in Australia. You've got people who support funding Zelensky, or they support lockdowns, they support wearing masks, they support yes to the referendum, which is coming up in Australia in 7 days. And on the other side, the majority now, the growing majority, you have people who are saying no to the Albanese government's referendum, no to anything the government's trying to propose, no to all of the totalitarian measures which the government takes, no to the indoctrination of children, no to all this propaganda which is taking place in the West, and most importantly, no to supplying any weapons, any Australian weapons or any Australian money overseas to Ukraine. It's probably the lowest now polling in relation to support for Australian involvement in the war. And that's a great thing for Russia. It's a terrible thing for Ukraine, but it's also a great thing for Australia because Australians are sick of seeing the demilitarization of Australia. Australia doesn't have a large army. Australia doesn't have many weapons. Australia sent M777 systems, drones, missiles even, Bushmasters at $2.5 million each. And Australia simply does not have the weapons to be involved in a war like this in relation to the Pacific.
I'm glad you brought up COVID because, you know, COVID and Ukraine, these are elite agendas that were not popular and no one voted on them. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go do a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine and the West. Stay with RT.
Take a fresh look around at life. Kaleidoscopic, isn't it? A shattered reality distorted by power. Tired vision with no real opinions. Pictures designed to simplify or confuse. Who really wants a better world? And is it just for the chosen few? Fractured images presented as fact. Can you see through their illusions? Going underground can.
Развязал настоящую гибридную войну, которая обрела уже беспрецедентный характер.
Вся история противостояния в Донбассе – это история, то есть это этап гибридной войны. Вся.
Конфликт между Соединенными Штатами и Россией, когда Киев должен быть инструментом для уничтожения России.
We are gambling with the future of all mankind, and we're risking it for nothing.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Ukraine and the West. Okay, let's go back to Larry in Tampa. Just to kind of stress the this is an elite agenda, I thought it was really quite interesting is that we had the election outcome in Slovakia, and then we had Joseph Borrell in Kiev saying, you know, Europe, the EU is behind Ukraine. I mean, you have, you know, the electorate saying one thing, and then you have this so-called foreign policy person who is a buffoon, essentially, a Mr. Magoo, saying he's speaking for all of the EU. I mean, you can't get more of a contradiction than that. Go ahead, Larry.
Well, the United States and NATO are really, they're struggling, and with that, the EU, because they had this plan, and it was a plan based on hope. That they thought that they could put enough that number one, they built Ukraine up as a military that could defeat Russia, at least in their minds. They didn't really look at it appropriately, but that's another matter. Second, they thought that Putin had very weak support, that the Russian economy was running on fumes. You know, the famous it's a country masquerading as a gas station. And what has happened in the course of confronting Russia and imposing both the economic sanctions and then throwing everything they have from a military standpoint short of nuclear weapons or putting NATO troops on the ground, it's all blown up in their face. And the notion that putting NATO troops on the ground would mean that they were more effective fighters than Ukrainians is just nonsense. It's ridiculous. Because the fact of the matter is, we have a 30-year history now of watching U.S. troops and NATO troops in places like Iraq and Afghanistan fail to quell people who did not have the same kind of intelligence support and surveillance capabilities and weaponry. And so here, the odd thing here is the Ukrainians are actually taking advice from these clowns.
Yeah, from these clowns that have not won a conflict. I mean, again, you know, sheep herders and not a pure power. Stephen, you know, one of the things that is very curious here is that as the counteroffensive has failed, one has to wonder if Russia is going to take advantage of it. One could make the argument that slowly but surely what the special military operation is succeeding. But, you know, I'll be honest with you, living here in Russia, there is frustration. Russians feel that they have the capacity to end this, and they would like to see it end. Stephen.
Russians were reluctant from the beginning. I mean, this might sound ridiculous, but basically I think we came to this point because Russians were exhausting every possible way to just not escalate. So what they did, they went through this Minsk agreements for 7 or 8 years, and they were tricked. And at the end, they had to resort to military intervention, which was obvious back in 2008 when in Bucharest, NATO decided to integrate Ukraine and Georgia, which was a direct recipe for a disaster and for a future war that is happening right now. So what the West did, it actually forced Russia to completely, destroy the combined Ukrainian NATO forces on the territory of the former Soviet Republic of Ukraine. And I think that this will only, I mean, this part of the, let's say, global war will end with Russian troops in Kiev and probably on the Polish border.
Well, Simon, in Sydney here, I think it was last week, Foreign Minister Lavrov said the West wants a conclusion in Ukraine on the battlefield. And he said, well, that's fine with us here. And I'm agreeing with what we heard with Stephen here. I mean, the West doesn't want peace. They never talk about peace. They only talk about Russia's defeat, which is not going to happen. So, you know, all of this Western support for Ukraine is destroying Ukraine. Go ahead, in Sydney.
I think what the problem is that the West was never really, truly committed to fighting Russia. It was all about virtue signaling. Some people call it
hope.
Well,
no, Simon. I would have a variation on that. They wanted to fight Russia, but they wanted someone else to do it. I think that's the whole. Gambit here. Keep going. Go ahead.
Exactly right. I mean, they were happy to see Ukrainians die, and these mass cemeteries that are all over Ukraine. Once these territories are liberated, we need to have monuments there and plaques to those Ukrainian soldiers to say that these men died because of NATO. It's actually NATO who killed these hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians all around the country. It's very sad because Russia never wanted that. We know the way the Russians started the military operation. In fact, Russian troops on the 24th of February, 2022, many of the Russian troops were said, don't shoot at Ukrainian soldiers at all because we expected them to surrender or come and join our side. We were filled with the euphoria from Crimea, and that was the expectation. And at the end of the day, now that NATO has got egg on its face, it's shown the whole world that its weapons are inferior, its tactics are inferior. Russia, on the other hand, emerges out of this conflict as a very strong country. It's the most you could say strongest Russia's ever been. Military production levels are back to where they were in the Soviet Union days. Russia, it has the most drone attack and defense systems in the world. Right. Because why I say that is it's arguable, of course, but Russia has the experience. Russia is the only country in the world that has been using drones and also defending against drones in such a capacity. So we emerge out of this special operation with Russia being the most well-prepared out of any country in the world for a future larger conflict, which is probably around the corner. This is probably a very similar situation to the Soviet-Finnish War, which preceded the Second World War, the Great Patriotic War, where it was necessary to, you know, have some mistakes, learn some mistakes, costly, but then it improves our position in the future. So Russia is most prepared out of all the countries now. And I think Russia is in very high morale, which is the most important thing. The Russian people are rallying behind the president. The Russian military is rallying. And Russia is, it's sort of purged itself of traitors, purged itself of, today in the news, the FSB reported that a man in Kamchatka was arrested and stripped of his Russian citizenship. Now, this is a very interesting development, that this is happening, that they're actually now stripping people of Russian citizenship for extremism, for calling for the murder of Russians or attacks on Russia. And, of course, it's no surprise that this man was an ex-Ukrainian who received Russian citizenship in 2014. Okay. So within Russia, it's fantastic, the you could say, the advancement that Russia's receiving, all these hidden unlocked bonuses. Putin started with certain objectives, demilitarization, denazification of Ukraine, but he's also demilitarized a whole wave of NATO countries, the Estonia, Lithuania, Latvia, Poland, Australia even. They've all been demilitarized.
Yeah, well, Larry, also this conflict is revealed what's happening in Nazi-occupied Canada, which is a a topic of another program, which I've already done. But it's very interesting. You know, we heard from Simone that, you know, the Russians have learned from their mistakes. I agree. Will NATO learn from its mistakes, Larry?
No, there's a flat learning curve.
Yeah.
There's a real resistance. In fact, I am aware that the U.S. military right now has been carrying out some exercises. They're preparing to go to war with China. I mean, it sounds mad. It sounds insane. But they have not learned anything from this conflict in the war in Ukraine. They made the calculation, number one, recognize Ukraine represented, even though it wasn't an official member of NATO, it represented the second largest military force in NATO. And they sincerely believed that they could launch it against Russia, that the Russians would collapse because the Russian military, according to the Western intelligence, was a hollowed out shell, poorly led, with people who had been conscripted against their will and were a bunch of criminals anyway, and that it would just rapidly collapse and implode. Plus, Russia didn't have any ability whatsoever to produce missiles. They'd fire one or two and it'd be done. Well, it was all a lie. And what's so shocking about this is that the Western intelligence did not correctly identify the real capabilities that Russia had and what it could do. And so now they've single-handedly destroyed what was a U.S.-led international order and have now created the post-World War II thing is done. It's dying. And we're witnessing the rise of a new, genuine multipolar world.
Well, Stephen, you're living in Europe. I mean, what has the average European citizen gotten from all of this? I mean, they're always saying sacrifice. The elites say sacrifice. They never sacrifice the elites, never, okay? But, you know, what do people in Slovakia, in Hungary, in Poland, in your country, what is the upside of all of this? I can't see any, none, zero.
Serbs being in two wars with NATO during the 90s are probably an exception to the rule. But in Europe, first they were fed with propaganda, and I think now they're fed up with anger because the living standard is falling, and there is no point and no progress from the standpoint of where they begin with, that Ukraine is defending the free world. I mean, the old, basically, the old myth of Spartans being individualistic Europeans who are fighting against these hordes from Asia and so on. That was exactly what Hitler used, basically, against.
Yeah, against, that's absolutely right. We've been here before. Keep going.
Yeah, I mean, the same words, the same, you know, European identity, European. You should just look at the Nazi propaganda in the countries outside of Germany, occupied by the Germans or allied to the Germans. It looks exactly the same. They're, you know, European unity against these evil hegemons from the East and so on. So I think that this is all falling apart. And at the same time, with the global actually the globalist agenda falling, I think we are seeing already and will see more and more of internal disputes and God knows what, to be quite honest, in the future when it comes to Western European societies in particular, because the elites are have time and again failed their voters, failed their citizens, and as somebody will have to be responsible for this. And I think that the citizens will try to do so. However, these societies are quite divided among many lines within themselves. And that is why I think we expect some kind of, I would say, decades of Mad Max style.
Well, I'll be very modest. I'll be happy just to see the end of NATO. I'll take that victory when I can get it, okay? That's all the time we have, gentlemen. I want to thank my guests in Belgrade, Tampa, and in Sydney. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, crosstalk rules.